Hi, everybody. Welcome to Mindful Health. Welcome to the Recording for Real Talk episode. Mindful Health, you know, you can reach out to us anytime at www.mindfulhealthicc.com. We have a host of different services to support you and your mental health. And we can reach us on all of our socials at TikTok and Instagram. So I'm so excited today. Today is Friday, and I am excited to speak with Kevin Crowe from Give a Mile. And welcome, Kevin. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're coming through loud and clear. How's my sound?
That's great. Yeah, there's a little bit of an echo, but I don't think I can change that at all. So
yeah, we'll, I think it's my Instagram Live.
And we'll just hang with it. Maybe I can like turn my volume down. There we go. That'll work. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So Kevin, tell us a little bit about Give a Mile. How did you get involved with such a wonderful organization? Where did it all start? What was the impetus for it? What was the idea?
Yeah, absolutely. So what Give a Mile does is we have people donate their unused travel miles, and we give flights to people that are in hospice, palliative care, or critical ICU. So majority of cases, this is people that are at end of life, right? And so you give 1,000 United miles, and I give 1,000 United miles, and we get mothers, brothers, fathers, sisters, sons, daughters, best friends on a plane to fly, and in most cases for a last visit, right? A chance to be there to support their loved one, hold a hand, to say what needs to be said. And Give a Mile started because I had an amazing friend, Ryan Westerman, and I even hate to use the word friend because it was more like a brother. And we had this incredible journey. In the last year of his life, he got diagnosed with brain cancer, and had a 4.5-year-old son at the time, and his wife. And he said, you know, Kev, he's like, I just need somebody I can confide in and be there. And we were both kind of in the same stage of life. We'd recently been married. We had both had young sons, and our careers were doing really well. And he said, you know, I got a face I need to put on for my family and my friends, but I need somebody that will be my kind of wingman through this. And it was scary, right? It's a scary ask. Yeah. Your friend's dying, and, you know, it's going to be a big emotional journey. And I'm so glad I said yes. I said, absolutely, I'm willing to do that for you. And we spent an incredible year of life together. And to understand perspective and priorities and what life's really about, it's amazing to see it through somebody's eyes who's in pretty much the same stage of life as you that is running out of time. And there was just so many epiphanies and so many learning lessons inside Ryan's journey. He was a really inspiring guy, like a super inspiring guy. He's like, I'm not going to waste or try not to waste time being bitter and angry because I'm not having enough time. Like, I'm going to try to seize as much of this time as possible. And he, you know, he did things like, he's like, why wait for a funeral to fly everybody in to say nice things about me? Let's do it while I'm here. Let's have a big party. And he would draw all his friends in, and it was an incredible evening. And, you know, I even remember, you know, you get to that point where just, you know, you don't have any hope for a miracle drug, right? Like, you know, it's just, we know what's going to happen. And I said to Ryan, I said, hey, you know, what do you want to do? Like, he was a big golfer. Like, well, I'll take you to the best golf courses in the world. We'll take the kids to Disney World. Like, you know, whatever you want to do, man, I'll find a way to get it done. And he said, I don't care about any of that. I just want to be with my wife and my son and spend time with people I love. And so just to watch him play like Connect Four with his son, or you know, grab his son and cuddle with him and watch Jungle Book in bed, just showed me the power of visit, the power of time. And that's, you know, really was the inspiration of Give a Mile. I wanted to do something really special because Ryan was such a special guy, and all the lessons and memories he had taught me. And I heard about all these unused travel miles. Like, there's like tens of billions of unused travel miles. And I'm from Calgary, Alberta, and in Canada, and only 1 in 4 people were born and raised here. And so when Ryan was in hospice, we just saw so many families having to say goodbye via Skype or phone calls, or, you know, just financially exhausted and just on the phone saying, you know, we know dad knows you can't afford to fly. It's okay. So I heard about those travel miles, obviously inspired by some incredible friend. We put it together, and we've gotten 757 flights out the door, 25 million miles donated. 100% volunteer team, 100% donation model. So any miles you donate are going to go to get flights out the door. So.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. Such an unfortunate story to be able to have to be faced with losing your friend, but such an amazing thing that you have done with that and put this thing together and, you know, really made some meaning out of that whole experience. I wonder how that changed things for you in your own life with your own family and going through, you know, processing and navigating your own mental health and trying to stay positive during those times. Cause I'm sure it's, you know, took a toll on your life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was, you know, there's two sides to every coin, right? And so, sure. And one side of that coin was like living in the moment and, just like feeling so full of life because you know you only had so much time left, right? And you wanted to seize the moments and just getting a real good perspective and priority on what was really important. You know, Ryan would say to me things like, I know, you know, I would visit him a couple times a week and I got to his place one day and, you know, I worked downtown and I was like throwing my jacket off and like getting into his house and he's like, oh, you're pretty frustrated. I was like, yeah. And he's like, what are you frustrated with? Bad rush hour traffic? And I'm like, yeah, it was terrible getting over here. And he goes, oh, what I wouldn't do to be able to sit in rush hour traffic on the way to my job. Right. Yeah. Like the things that we take for granted and just, you know, just a different perspective on those things. And so it really opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, we only have so much time and this is a gift and to use it appropriately and to be present in that and as much as possible. And I know the Stoics talk a lot about like mento mori, like reflecting on your own death and putting things in perspective. So it had that power. But on the other side, I mean, you're losing a friend and it was brain cancer. So you're watching your friend literally almost evaporate in front of you, right? Like he's losing functions and just deteriorating like that. And he had a 4.5-year-old son running around inside that and his wife and just the effect it had on them. You know, one of the things I did is I told myself I always wanted to run a marathon. So I had been going to the gym and working out and starting to run to deal with the emotions inside myself and just ended up running longer and longer and longer distances as it was getting tougher and tougher and ended up just running a marathon shortly after Ryan passed away. You know, just kept kind of that physical exercise going to help with mental clarity. And then, you know, I think one of the big things was Ryan was just such an open guy and just in some ways was really helping us get through the grief. I remember there was this one moment in hospice where the doctor said to us, his wife's name's Tasha, said to Tasha and I, do you want us to cut back the drugs? Because by this time he's pretty much unconscious and I can cut back the drugs and you can have conversations, right? Because we're getting really in the last few days. And we were able to say to the doctor, like, we have had every conversation we need to have. Like, everything has been said that needs to be said. You do not have to put this man in any pain, right?
Yeah.
He was just a very open person and which is very hard to do, would not shy away from the conversations of how things were going to go, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That open and honest communication. And you really have no choice at that stage but to just be available for every conversation and keep that communication open.
And obviously I don't think everyone's like that. I think some people obviously struggle with that. Now I think that was a big gift that Ryan gave us, that he would talk about it and he would let us know and he would tell us what he wanted, you know, what, do this with my family, do this with my son afterwards and his wishes and those types of things. So you weren't kind of trying to guess any of that, and I think that really helped with the grieving process. And then, you know, when we started giving my, it took me a couple of years. Some people, when you hear the story, they think, oh, you know, like after a month of grieving, I started giving my, but it literally was 2 or 3 years later.
Yeah.
And that's really helped just keep his spirit and his memory alive and to be able to tell his story with yourself and other people and his son, who's now just turned 16 on the weekend.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's been some time. A couple of days ago. Yeah. So his son has always participated and seen Give a Mile growing and It's in memory of his dad. So all those things have been big pieces of the mental health for sure to deal with it.
It's so fantastic that you've managed to stay connected to with the family and keep that friendship alive as well too. That's really, I'm sure, very meaningful to both of you.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. All of us, right? All of us. It's a big part of our lives for sure.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the process of Give a Mile. Like when people want to, people can donate their unused miles really is what you're looking for. Right.
Yeah.
When I saw this come across my feed, I knew I had to have you on the show because I just thought, what an amazing idea. So inspirational and so efficient. I mean, we have all of these things that we don't use on a daily basis. And some people have these miles that just sit there and, you know, they get unused, or you don't want them to go to waste, or, you know, they're not in a position, you know, financially to use them because a lot of times you can't really get a full, you know, flight with the miles that you have. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, there's always those blackout periods and stuff, and it always seems to be never works out. Right.
So yes.
A lot of miles go unused. So I thought, what an incredible, incredible idea. So people can donate their miles.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the process for them to do that?
Yeah, if you go to giveamile.org on our website, there's a donate now button and you can click on that. We also publish each of the flight stories, so you can go to the specific flight and click on it and donate miles to that specific story. 100% of those miles are going to go to those flight stories. And so you can choose which program you're part of, like United or American Airlines, and then you pledge your miles to us. So you say, hey, I've got 25,000. And then as flights come in, we just match them to our flight recipients, and we'll reach out to you and say, hey, we've got this, you know, person that's flying, you know, maybe from like Pittsburgh down to Florida. We need you to book that flight for us. And you book those miles, and then we get it over to that family. We also do accept cash. We pay taxes, and there's about 10% of our flights we have to do in cash because we just can't find a seat with miles. To your point, sometimes there's blackouts or, you know, there's just certain things happening. And we're a 501c charity in the US and a charitable status in Canada. So any money we'll give you a tax receipt for. So money helps us as well. One of the big things for us right now, especially after, you know, we had a great TikTok video that got connected to a lot of people, is we want to get the word out to families, right? Like one of the, I would say the toughest things about Give a Mile that, or the frustrating things about Give a Mile is, when I bump into people or people hear about Give a Mile, they're like, if I only had known it about 2 months ago for my dad, or, you know, we would have flown our brother if we had known about this 3 months ago. And so we've got to get the word out there. So if you're know of anybody, or you're dealing with a situation where you've got a family member that's, you know, in hospice or under palliative care or in an ICU unit, and you're financially strapped, you can't make that happen, you know, reach out to Give a Mile. You can email us at info@giveamile.org. We'll give you the application process. We do require email confirmation, verification. There's a waiver to form to sign, but it's really, we try to make it as simple as possible. We understand there's a lot of stress going on with families in this situation. And we can rush it if it's an emergency. You know, we do get a lot of people that reach out and are like, hey, I got to fly tonight, or, you know, I got to fly tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We do our best. Once we have those documents, it usually takes us about 4 hours to review them and approve them. So a lot of times I can't get you out the same day, but I probably can get you out the next day or as soon as possible, obviously, to get to that family for sure.
Right. And I want to stress too, this is a program for not to just visit family because you miss them or you haven't seen them in a while. This is really focusing on sort of emergency situations where it's like an end of life care situation. And, you know, you may not have much time with a family member. So I want to stress that for anyone who's just tuning in right now.
That's right. Yeah. And end of life critical care. Right. So
right.
A lot, you know, we just did a flight and it was for a mom. Her daughter had fallen out of a 5-story building. She was in ICU unit, brain injuries, physical broken bones. And it, you know, obviously very, very serious situation. And her mom wanted to be there with her. And so absolutely, you know, we made that flight happen. So whether, you know, the person's in hospice or under palliative home care, any of those situations, this is what it's about for sure.
Absolutely. And so you have a minimum donation, right, for miles?
Yeah.
And what is that?
Yeah, it's 1,000 miles. And that just helps us obviously with kind of the various programs, et cetera. We do run certain campaigns during certain times of the year. Like we did a big United campaign where we raced 500,000 miles in March, and we'll probably do another focused campaign come the fall. We do flights all year round, but we do flights for Mother's Father's Day, specific campaign, and we always do a big Christmas campaign. Pre-COVID, I think we gave 56 flights away at Christmas for families. Obviously, you know, hospice palliative care is important all year round, but at Christmas, you can especially imagine how difficult it is and how much families want and need to be together during that time. So 1,000 miles is a base donation. And we appreciate all support. Like we said, we're a volunteer team. We all have day jobs. We're just trying to do this.
Donation based, right? So you're not getting, you're not getting paid to do this. It's all volunteer. No. And I want to make sure people know that, because this is really a labor of love. This is a passion project, and you all there, your whole entire team do this from the kindness of your hearts to really help people. So it's really amazing.
Yeah, it's an incredible team of volunteers, and you know, we're about 30-ish volunteers, and I think most of the people have dealt with something similar in their life, whether they were able, you know, they financially could get to a parent or a loved one that was passing away, and so it just resonates with so many of us, right? So many of us have been in this situation where you have a loved one, maybe they're across the country or in a different city, but you're able to afford to get there, and then you put yourself in that seat thinking, well, what if I couldn't afford that, right? Like, how incredibly stressful that is. I know one of the flights we gave away to, it was for a woman. She only had a few weeks left to live, and we flew her granddaughter and her daughter in to see her. And she said, Cav, you know, like $1 million is meaningless to me right now. Like it means absolutely nothing. This is the most important thing in the world to me. So this is like, I've won the lottery, that fact that I'm going to see these two people that mean so much to me one more time. This is, you know, the biggest gift somebody could give me. So.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, when we're on our last days, I don't think anybody has ever said, you know, I wish I worked more, or I wish I, you know, I wish I ate that pizza, or, we all have that common thread where we wish we had more time with the people we love. And that's what makes this project so special. I wonder if you could touch on a little bit about, I get the sense that it's not just a flight for you. I'm sure when people are dealing with this kind of stage in their life, it's very emotional, and their mental health and their self-care and well-being is of importance to you. And I wonder how you handle that, because I'm sure people, you know, feel the need to or want to talk to you and tell their story a little bit more. And I wonder how you navigate sort of those conversations with giving people support, you know, in and around or beyond just the flight.
Yeah, for sure. I'll tell you a little bit of a story, and then I'll answer that for sure. Sure. Right. So when I first started Give a Mile, especially if you call it the first 20 flights, I personally called every family and say, hey, I got a flight for you. Right. And when I would say that, there'd be this huge, big pause of silence. And I would become quite anxious in that. And I would say, hey, like, we're totally legit. You can check the website. Like, I've emailed you the tickets. Because I thought they didn't believe me. But as I spent more time with the families, I realized it was the breakdown or failure of the proper human language to express what it meant to them in that moment, right? Like, they say, of course I'm going to say thank you. Of course I'm going to say how grateful I am. But you, those words seem so hollow to me for what this actually means to me. And so to me, I realized how powerful that moment was, because it was us in community together, seeing each other, not in judgment, just the fact that people could help each other. I know we gave a flight to a woman to fly to see her family in Korea. We did do international flights pre-COVID and post-COVID.
Right.
During COVID, it's been nearly impossible, but we flew her to Korea, and she was in her 30s. She had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And she said to us, she said, I am so grateful. And she was in tears that people I don't even know, who've never met me, are going to give me the most important thing in my life, right? Like, how great is this world that these people I've never met are willing to help me in my moment of need? And so this powerful human connection and this powerful human community. So one of the things, coming back to answer your question directly, is I've realized is the power of being present and just listening.
Yes.
A lot of times, I think, you know, there's a lot of uncomfortable conversations flowing around society these days, whether it be with race and politics and obviously death. And one of the things I realize is it's just important to listen, right? Like, I think yes. a lot of us feel like we've got to have the right answer and, hey, I want to say something and make it all right. And I realized, like, first off, I can't do that, right? As one woman said to me, she's like, I know, like, I was trying it. This is one of the early calls. I was trying to make her feel better. She goes, Kev, I'm dying. Just admit that, please, for me. Yeah. Be honest with me, right? And so just to be present and to listen and to give witness to their story. And a lot of times that story is about the loved one and the situation they're in, right? So they just want to be heard. Now, the other thing is, a lot of times, you know, people are in a very stressed out situation. I know that, I remember this one call I got. People sometimes get my phone number, so I just get calls out of the blue. Right. And I got a call. It was like 9 o'clock at night, and it was a woman, and you could tell she was extremely, extremely upset. And she was like, you know, my mom is dying. She's on life support. I have to fly there and be there, not only to make the decision to pull her off of life support, but I have to, like, I'm the executor of all her estate, and I have all this pressure on me for the rest of the family of what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And so in those situations, we realize that we have to make this as easy as possible and walk them through, even though we, you know, if I showed the application process, it's one page, but even though to you and I, it looks simple right now, when you're in that state, it can become overwhelming. It can become a big mountain. And so just to be super helpful and patient and kind and mindful is, I think, really, really important. And to meet people where they're at, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times, you know, we always say for the vast majority of flights, it's not just one thing happening in those people's lives, right? Like, it's usually a series of things and that have got them into that position that they, you know, they're reaching out for help. And so mm-hmm. you have to meet them there and understand what they need from a resource perspective. So it's been an incredible gift for me. And I always say, you know, thank you to the families. And they always say, well, you don't need to say thank you to me. I'm supposed to say thank you to you. And I'm like, well, there's a couple reasons I say thank you to you. One is it keep my friend's memory, right? This is in his memory. So it's an honor for me to be paying it forward from Ryan. But two, the gift that they always give me to reflect and a reminder, because I do get calls and things, I can tell you, you know, I have a day job, so sometimes I'm working away and I have all these day job problems. And then a family will call me and they'll tell me, like, hey, we need to get a dad to a 9-year-old girl who's dying from brain cancer. And you're like, yeah, I don't have any problems. My life's pretty good. Yeah. I don't know what I was complaining about, but perspective is everything. And so they're constantly giving me that gift. And so I really, you know, it's just a huge respect and love for the families. The other thing they show me a lot of is incredible courage and strength of the resilience of the human spirit. A lot of us say, well, I would never be able to get through that. Or if I was in that situation, I wouldn't be able to get through it. I bet you would. Cause I've seen, you know, 757 people that have an incredible human courage and resiliency beyond any of us, what we probably think we have until we're put in that situation, you know?
You mentioned a lot of really key components to mindfulness and similar to what we do at the clinic. And that's, you know, having perspective and being in the present and having balance and not thinking too far into the future, but just being grateful for what's happening in the here and now. And I wonder how that plays into your personal life aside from the business. Have you found that because of this project and because of these experiences, you've been able to develop a greater sense of mindfulness in your own life, in your day-to-day?
Oh yeah, 100%. 100%. And I mean, you know, this journey, has made me a better person, is making me a better person on a daily basis, especially as I keep learning from the families, you know, and just like, just so many lessons. And, you know, through Ryan's journey and through Give a Mile, I'll just give you an example. You know, I said, we both had young sons, right? And I remember we're talking one day and we're just talking about, like, my son was playing, I'm Canadian, right? So we're playing hockey, right? and he just said, he goes, just remember, I'm never going to see my son's sports, right? I'm not going to be able to go to his practices or games. So you think about that when you don't want, or you're not able to go to a practice or game because work's in the way. Or you think about that as your son's playing sports, that there's only going to be so many games and practices you get to see. So it was a beautiful gift that, you know, as I watched my son grow, and my son's, you know, 18 now, to be present in those moments and to realize like they are going to go away. They're impermanent, right? So be present, you know, get off your phone, watch your son play hockey, appreciate the fact that, you know, this is only going to be here for so long. And so, you know, reflecting on those things and understanding, you know, I give another example of that. I remember when Ryan, you know, was in hospice, we would take him out. I would take him out on day trips, right? And I took him out for an ice cream. And he was going on about this ice cream, how great the ice cream cone was. And I was like, hey, like, settle down, dude. Like, you know, like, it's ice cream, you know? And he's like, yeah, but this is probably my last ice cream cone I'm ever going to have. And all of a sudden, when you put in that context and that framing, oh, those ice cream cones were pretty good, right? Like, wow, this is an amazing ice cream cone. And so when you start to think about that, I know, especially in Western society, we don't really like to talk about death or think about death. But to me, it's been super empowering, the fact of sitting in moments and really appreciating the moments for what they are, because you know they are going to disappear into the future, right? Mm-hmm. And that impermanence, and so just be able to sit on a nice evening and, you know, watch the sunset, or, you know, just hang out with friends and have a conversation. And, you know, we realized when Ryan was passing away, just the little things are life. Like, yeah, we tend to think a bucket list and, you know, gonna go to Vegas and I want to go Super Bowl, and they're all great things. Like, that's great. But the most important things are these little things that happen day in and day out that we just take for granted because we think they're going to go on forever.
Yeah. It's really sort of changed your DNA, as you said, made you become a better person, or look for ways to do better and think better and be better. Has that impacted, do you feel, your son's life and your relationship, and what were some of those life lessons that have helped along the way?
Yeah. I would say absolutely. And, you know, my Ryan's son's name was Talon. My son's name is Aiden, and they're buddies, right? Like, they are still good buddies. They can think of themselves as brothers, right? Like, you know, they're only children. Both of them are only children. So they consider themselves brothers. And, you know, my son witnessed that, right? He was present, and he saw what it did to myself. And I had incredible support from my wife, and she was there by my side the whole time. And to your point, there was a lot of emotionally exhausting moments and that type of thing. And I remember, you know, after Ryan passed away, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks later, we just looked at ourselves and as a group, and we said, hey, we're going to go to Disney World, right? So Tash and Talon and my wife, Hannah and my son Aiden, we all went down. We're going to go to the happiest place in the world. And so we went down there, and I remember,
it really is the happiest place.
We were down there just having a great time, and Talon and Aiden were kind of stood off to the side, and you know those punching balloons or whatever, you know, some kid had got one, you know, his parents had bought it, and he was hitting it, and it was hitting Talon, right? Like, I don't know if the kid realized he was hitting Talon or whatever, and my son just grabbed Talon. He put Talon behind his back, and he just looked at the kid, and he was just like, don't do that. Oh. And to me, it was a powerful message of how much they had bonded. And I think, you know, I hope the reflection of, you know, band of brothers, I had been there for my friend, and I had protected him as much as I could. And here the next generation was doing the same. Right. And so
absolutely,
it was just a really powerful thing to see. And you know, they check, my son checks in on Talon, right? And gives him advice and that type of thing. And of course, you know, they're like brothers, so sometimes they won't listen to each other. But yeah, it's, I think the lessons there, they're hard to put into words because they do change your character. Like, they're pivot points. Like, yeah, I know one person said, you know, when you see something like that and go through an experience of losing Ryan like that, it's like being unplugged from the matrix, right? Like, the way you see the world is just in a very different light. And, you know, I think before I worked for a tech company, and the tech company was growing and, you know, very committed to my career and, you know, very ambitious, and those things have changed. I work for the same company, and we're still a growing company, but they're just a different perspective. They're not the end all and be all of everything. And, you know, you just try to keep them as, you know, part of your life versus everything in your life, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. What's been the feedback with the companies that you work with, the airlines that you work with? How have they responded to your organization?
Yeah, you know, the biggest, United and up here in Canada, Air Canada, have mm-hmm. been the biggest promoters and sponsors of it. And they've been fabulous to work with. Like, they absolutely get it. You know, I think for them, it's a reminder. Sometimes it's a reminder to them about how important some of those flights are, right? Because sometimes we think, oh, hey, we're just getting people to, you know, go to a vacation. And those are all great things. But I'm like, no, like, let me tell you, like, on those planes, are people going to see a loved one for the last time? And I know when we got shut down through COVID and COVID restrictions, I was talking to them just about, you know, there's a lot of pressure, especially up in Canada, about should people be traveling and should right. we, you know, totally shut it down. And I just said, from my perspective, I just want to tell you, the people that are getting those flights, this is how important it is to them, right? That there were still things happening even through COVID, where there was life and death situations that didn't stop. And I know we did a flight in Canada from one of our northern communities. There was a family reached out, and her sister was down in Vancouver, and she had a 9-week-old on life support, and she had to make a decision around what to do. And she was by herself, and she goes, please just fly a family member. It was her other sister, just to come and be with me. Mm-hmm. To support me and get me through this, right? You're from a small northern community, and now you're in yep. a big city, and you've got all this pressure on you. That was through COVID, and we were able to make that flight happen. And so the airlines have been incredible. You know, we did the United campaign in March, and they helped match some miles, and Air Canada, the same thing, and they helped promote it. And so those partnerships are really key. They've been really flexible with us as we've had to change sometimes airline tickets, right? Because things change, and
yeah.
you know, where they can, they've helped us, you know, get people in more comfortable positions. Like, you know, hey, we understand this patient needs a wheelchair, and we're going to treat them like a VIP to get them there. So
right.
I can't say enough about those partnerships, you know.
That's fantastic. How has COVID changed the dynamics of your organization, and have you found that people are more stressed and more anxious about what, you know, the outcome of what they're facing? How has that impacted what you're doing?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that hasn't really been talked a lot about is people are dying alone. And it's just kind of just been a fact of COVID. And whether that's people with COVID and no one's been allowed in, or just the fact that, you know, I know every hospice, every state, every province is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And some hospices would only allow one family member in. And so we had people reaching out that, you know, didn't realize that. And because we have to get medical confirmation, we'd be like, well, there's already a family member there, so you're not going to be able to travel. There was people that were like extremely nervous about flying and should I get on a plane? And I'm worried about my own health and right. Like I don't know what to do. So it's been a very heartbreaking experience. We do international flights, and we've had,
okay,
a, you know, through this.
Yeah.
We've had people reach out, and we, you know, and if the person's well enough, we will fly that person. So I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had a Canadian man that was looking to go back to Slovenia to pass away, right? That's where he was born and raised. That's where his family is. Couldn't mm-hmm. get him a flight. Couldn't even get him in the country. And so those things that are happening, I know we had a flight, a woman in the Philippines, her mom couldn't even be admitted in the hospital because the hospital was so overwhelmed right now. So she was right. trying to get there to care for her mom in the house. But it was going to be like a four-legged flight. And so it's been really, really challenging. And we're super happy that people are getting vaccinated and things are starting to open up. And, you know, we expect that some pent-up demand will come because people have been waiting, right? Okay, now I feel safe to fly.
Yeah.
But I do, you know, it's been a struggle because, you know, part of the Give Them All mission, or at the heart of it is, you know, people are going to have their loved ones with them. And COVID, unfortunately, has not allowed that to happen.
Yeah. What is sort of the criterion for accepting people for flights? Because I'm sure you get a lot of requests, and you can't take everybody, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You come
yeah.
up against that barrier. What are some of the key factors that people need to be aware of when they're looking to your organization?
Yeah, the first thing is obviously palliative hospice, right? So you're either on palliative care, which, you know, just to define palliative means like, you know, we're just going to try to ease the pain. And so people can be under palliative care for quite a long period of time. Obviously, if you're in hospice or under hospice care at home, and then if you're in an ICU unit, those are the key criteria. Then we just do first in, first out. So
okay.
As people apply, you know, when we get your application, it's medically verified, you signed your waiver, then we process it through our flight review team. If there's a family situation, we try to meet the family needs. Obviously, maybe it's two grandparents, or maybe there's right. a brother and sister. We will look at the family situation and do our best. We don't try to make hard-coded rules, right? Like, oh, we only do, you know, three people, or we only do one person. Mm-hmm. We're like, okay, how have the donations been? What is the situation? Can we match this? Can we make it happen?
And these are round trip flights, correct?
That's right. Round trip flights with taxes covered. Yeah.
Right.
The two biggest flight requests we get that don't meet our criteria is for a funeral. So people are like, hey, my grandmother died or my mom died. And it's outside our charitable mandate. And the second one is I have a medical appointment. So I'm trying to get somewhere, maybe for medical treatment or something. We don't meet either of those. But just saying that if we've given you a flight and unfortunately your loved one passed away before you could get there, and that flight's still yours. We gave it to you in good faith, right? And we want to honor that flight. It's as if, you know, hey, I'm calling you because I need to get to a funeral. That's just outside our charitable mandate.
Sure. Is there any particular story that really stands out for you? I'm sure that they're all meaningful, but is there one in particular that just comes to mind that really touched your soul?
Yeah. There is incredible stories, and there's several that come to mind. Right. And, you know, one of them was I think it was in the first 20 flights, and it was a gentleman by the name of Pedro, originally from Nicaragua, immigrated, you know, the typical immigration story. I'm coming, I'm going to work very hard, and then I'm going to bring my family, my daughter and my wife. Right. Mm. Unfortunately, he gets stage 4 stomach cancer, can no longer work, therefore can't afford to bring his family. And so he got connected to us and said, yeah, you know, we put it through, got all the process done and approved both flights. So we're going to fly his wife and daughter. The family has to deal with the travel documents. So they got their travel documents sorted out. And he said, they're flying to Calgary. So he's like, Kev, come to the airport. I want you to meet my family. Right. And I was like, okay. So we had this incredible reunion, right. His daughter and his wife and incredible hugs. And he said a couple of important things to me that always stick with me. One, he said, even though he's palliative, you still get treatment. He goes, Kev, this is the only reason I've been actually going for my treatments, eating, taking care of myself, because this has given me hope. This has given me a reason to live, right? That I was going to see these people one more time. And so, you know, he's like, this is the best mental state I've been in, right? Like, just that this gift is coming. The second thing he said to me was, it was so important for him, for his daughter to come and see this amazing country, and why he left her, right? Like, he wanted to explain and show her, like, I didn't abandon you. I didn't just take off. Like, this is what I was trying to give you, this amazing, beautiful spot, this amazing life I was trying to build for you. And it was so important for him to demonstrate and show her that. Now, I think that flight was in April or May. And he was like, I really hope there's snow because my daughter has never seen snow. And fortunately, we had a blizzard. Really, we had snow when she arrived. So everybody was mad in the city that we were having snow, and Pedro were super happy that we had snow and his daughter got to see snow. So just incredibly eye-opening once again, right? Grateful perspective, understanding the importance of all the things we take for granted in life, right? And these important moments for us. There's another flight that really sticks with me, and it was a woman, and once again, kind of in the early flights, and a social worker. We get most of our flights through social workers, hospice care providers, people that are working at the hospices, right, ICU units. She reached out and she said, Kev, I've got this woman. She needs to get back to the Philippines. She wants, you know, terminal stage 4 cancer. They've stopped treatment. She wants to go tell her family, close it off with her family.
Yeah.
Make a flight happen. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. We, you know, talked to our donors, we got a flight. And so I went over and gave her the flight. I gave her the ticket, and she gave me this most incredible hug, like just held on to me for like 2 minutes. And you just feel just the joy and the relief and everything inside her. And so we talked, and she said, you know, not only was she flying to Manila, but then she had to take a train, you know, 3 hours up in the mountains to see her family, and just how much it meant to her that she was going to be able to go see them face to face and just explain the situation. And she had two daughters here in Canada, but she wanted to go to her parents, and I think she had a bunch of brothers and sisters and that type of thing. So she made it, and she made it back. And I've never really done this, but the social worker said, "Hey, do you want to go to the funeral? You should come to the funeral." And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." Like just felt bonded to her, just, you know, from right. meeting her. And so I went to the funeral, and I showed up maybe like, you know, 15 minutes early. And she's Filipino. I was the only white person sitting in the crowd. And so the family comes up to me and they go, Are you at the right funeral? At the right funeral? And I said, yeah. And I explained, I said, oh, I'm from Gibbon. And just the look on their face and how much love they had at that immediate moment. Of course, you know, amazing hugs, and everybody got to meet everybody, and just the gratefulness and the respect. And so I'm sitting there. So the funeral ceremony starts, and they Skype the family in from the Philippines, and the family doesn't know I'm there.
Yeah.
And the family is saying how much it meant for them to see their sister, their cousin, their daughter, and how important that flight was. And then someone said, "The guy for the organization's here," and like they're like, "Stand up," and just the love in that room. And that's when I was like, okay, we got to do this, and we got to do lots of this, right? Like this is powerful. This is important. This has meaning.
So meaningful.
This is, right. And so it's just one of those real confirmations of, you know, it's important that we do this, and we do this at a certain scale. And hence why, you know, we've, you know, expanded in the US, and we're at 757 flights and trying to do more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there are so many.
Do you have a goal for, you know, the amount of flights you want to reach?
I do. I like crazy, big, hairy, audacious goals. Jim Collins and
audacious,
good to great.
Good word.
Yeah. And so my craziest idea is to give a billion miles away this way, would probably be about 45,000 flights to 50,000 flights. We're at 24 million given. Mm-hmm. Actually, I should say 25. We just passed 25 million with the last few flights.
Wow.
So, you know, that's our crazy goal. But we think, like, one, it's global. Everybody has travel loyalty systems, and everybody experiences this.
Yeah.
So every country, every place in the world could use a model like this. And so, yeah, it's a crazy goal, but it absolutely has that scale and potential to be that.
It's the crazy goals that succeed. You'll definitely do it.
Right.
How do you manage? Sorry.
It's got to be crazy enough to scare you. And
yeah,
it's always good when people kind of laugh at it, because it's like got to be a little that far out there, right? Where people are like, that's in the air. Yeah.
I love
that. Good luck.
I love that. I always say, if you want to see me laugh, tell me I can't do something.
That's right. That's when you get motivated. Yeah.
How do you balance and handle your emotions? I mean, just listening to your stories and about the organization, I mean, I've teared up about 15 times during the last 45 minutes so far. How do you, because I'm sure it's extremely emotional. How do you manage that and balance that for yourself in your own personal space?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of things there. I would say one of the things I say, and especially, you know, when I talk about Ryan and some of the emotional stories is my tears are badges of honor. I live, I love, right? Like those are important things for me. Like I'm glad I have them. I don't want to get rid of them, right? Like I want to be in life. But you know, there's important things, you know, meditation every morning.
Yeah.
I'm a person that works out and ends my workout with yoga. I'm a person that journals every day. And all those things to me have been really good mindful tactics of just helping you understand yourself and where you're at and kind of your own thought process, right? Because I think the important thing is to become the observer of the observer, right? Like, don't let your mind be the wild horse that takes you through life. If you can absolutely start to observe it, and then you can direct it and ride it in the right directions you want to go. I'm a big fan of the Stoics. So I think Ryan Holiday's books, he's done a great job with, you know, the obstacle is the way, and just understanding that mindset of, you know, the most important thing to do, the most important journey is to control our own mind and to understand our own mind. And you know, that's a life process. Like it doesn't yeah. stop.
It's an ever learning journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm blown away by your ability to harness such amazing mindfulness in your own life. It's really phenomenal. I wanted to play a little word association if I could with you. Yeah. It's something I like to do at the crux of the interviews. I'm just going to shout out some words and you just tell me whatever comes to your mind. Okay. Travel.
Oh, travel to me, I immediately think of people going to see their loved ones at end of life. Right. And I there's this moment I want to have where I'm in an airport and I hear the person talking to me about giving them a flight and they're going to see a loved one. Right. That to me is the moment I want to either have on a plane or in waiting to get on a plane. Yeah. So absolutely.
Family.
Oh, it's my wife and son. Right. Just, they've been my rocks through this whole thing, my building blocks. They're just amazing people. Even, you know, through COVID and in Canada, we're still locked down. We still have tight restrictions. The most amazing thing is it's been awesome to hang out in our household, like lots of laughs and love. And of course everybody has their odd day, but I just say, you know, it's just been feel so blessed to hang out with people that I really love and like to hang out with. So.
Absolutely. Friendship.
Ryan, you know, automatically that's where my mind goes. Although that friendship was so deep, it's hard to put into words, you know, like, I remember the moment we had that conversation, I went to the emergency room cause he had a massive seizure and, there was a big snowstorm. So I showed up in the morning and his wife and son had just left. And so we were just the two of us by ourselves. And we had this like incredibly deep, profound conversation around what was going to happen and kind of how he wanted me to show up and what he needed of me. And it's hard to put into words how honest or just connected that conversation was about just two people, you know, in a true friendship, going to support each other and kind of get through it. It was a huge gift he gave me.
Communication.
Oh, hard. It's hard stuff. It's hard stuff. Yeah.
Mindfulness.
Meditation.
Yeah. What is one of the greatest lessons you've learned?
To me, the greatest and the most important lesson is impermanence, that this doesn't last. And it's, you know, it will come to an end. And I think it's important for many reasons. One of them is, we can take ourselves too seriously. And sometimes I think we kind of get caught up too much on the stage of life. Like I want to show up this way and it needs to be perfect. And, you know, someone's going to notice this and the grand scheme of, you know, billions of people have lived before us and billions of people are going to live after us and the universe is going to go on just fine. Don't worry about that stuff, right? Like take your shots, you know, if you fail a little bit, skin your knee, the world's going to go on. The universe is going to be just fine. Yeah. But then on the other side of it, and the fact that if this universe is infinite and there's so many possibilities that we're here right now in this moment, like I've been given this gift and what an amazing gift to give. And so, you know, use it wisely, treasure it. Yeah. It's not always easy, but there's probably a reason for that. And so understand that you're on this journey, this adventure.
Yeah. And Kevin, what do you know for sure?
Well, I'd say there's a few things I know for sure. And inside of this, I would say, if you look at, and this is going to kind of my philosophy on life, right? If you think of, and I obviously, you know, this is nothing against people's religious beliefs. This is just kind of how I look at it, is that it feels like use the metaphor, we've woken up in a weight room, right? We're in a gym, there's weights, there's treadmills, there's bikes. Now, you can spend your whole time asking, you know, why am I in a weight room? And even if I gave you an answer, it probably wouldn't satisfy you, right? You know, if I gave you an answer, oh, you're in the weight room because of this, you'd be like, yeah, okay, maybe. But you're in a weight room. Everything points to you in a weight room. So that means let's work out, let's exercise, let's build ourselves. And to me, that feels like the design of life, right? That we're here, we're being challenged. We have obstacles. We have this roller coaster. We have this path we need to follow. Now, if this crazy world, somebody showed up a big beam of light in the sky and it was like, I am God, I've created you. And about 10 minutes later, someone's going to go say, well, who created you? and who created you, and who created you, right? And so it's like, it's kind of like turtles all the way down. And so to me, what I know for sure is that this is a journey. This is an opportunity to learn, to grow. If you're in a library, you woke up in the library, read the books, nourish the books, take from the books, you know? And I know one thing for sure, at the end of the day, the most powerful thing is love. I've seen it, I felt it, I know it, it's pure. And when we can see each other, not in judgment, but when we can see each other and be in community, it's the most powerful thing we can experience as people.
That's fantastic. Kevin, just give us a short recap of how people can connect with you, the process of donating with you, with the organization. Let us know what the website is and your social media is. Go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So giveamile.org is our website. And if you go there, there'll be a donate now button right up on the front page. As well, there'll be flights you can donate to. So you can donate miles or you can donate cash. We're a 501c charity. In the U.S. and charitable status in Canada. You can also follow us on Facebook, Give a Mile. We're on Twitter at Give a Mile. We're on Instagram at Give a Mile. By all means, follow us, amplify, tell the story, share the story, because we want to get it out. If you need a flight or if you know of someone that needs a flight, they just need to email us at info@giveamile.org. We'll connect them to the process and we'll help them through the process.
Okay. And TikTok you mentioned, is that... you have TikTok, Give a Mile as well?
Yeah, but it's Kevin Stewart Crowe, StuartCrowe. That's my personal account. To be honest, we're just playing around with TikTok, thinking, hey, this might be a good channel to get on. And obviously, we had a great video. It's been through like 500,000 views, and it's just really getting the word out there. So please, follow us on TikTok and share that content. Like I said, the most important thing is to get this word to these families that need flights.
Yeah. What's the best way for people watching this right now to be able to share your message and get that out? What do you recommend?
Yeah, I would say, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, those channels have been instrumental in people reaching out to us and hearing about us, right? Like I think just from the TikTok video that I think it's about 2 weeks now, I think we've done 7 or 8 flights of people that were like, I saw you on TikTok. I need help with a flight. That's people, we can bash social media, but there's some really good stuff happening there about connecting community. Yeah. So good stuff from social media for sure.
Excellent. Well, Kevin, I know your time is valuable and I won't keep you too much longer, but I want to thank you so much for the work you do. I have incredible, incredible respect for what you're doing and for you as a person. You have managed to create something with such great meaning and at the same time manage to maintain a balance and a mindfulness in your own life, which is just phenomenal. And you are definitely a light in a dark place. And I really, really appreciate all that you do. And anybody watching this, make sure you connect with Kevin on all the socials and get the word out. And thank you so much for joining me today. And I will post this interview to our Instagram and also to our YouTube channel and also on our podcast, Real Talk. I know the information that you've shared with us today is going to really help a lot of people. So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks. Okay, we'll see you later.